Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course you are in tune to our regular weekly broadcast, and family, it's going to be quite an informative one because we get ready to raise the bar. And when I say that, that means no hold barred, or no bars hold, whichever you prefer. But the point is, we've been holding back for a while, and we wanted to really see, you know, really closely some things, and so we have. We're going to tell you about what we've discovered over the past few years in particular. As we raise these questions and ask our women in particular, why is it that most Black women, well, I don't say most, I'll say some, do not support Black women's organizations unless they're connected to the system. Now, you got to admit, that's a real interesting revelation. 9 times out of 10, if you see a Black women's group, 9 times out of 10, it is diverse, meaning it got other people in it, or it's connected to the corporations, connected to sorority, connected to government, you name it. Why is that? We're going to talk about that later. But for right now, we want to hear from our brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
People see or experience social injustice. Movements are born. This should surprise none of us. For our mothers brought each of us forth at the crucible between death and life. When we see or experience social injustice, we viscerally sense pain and are urged by internal forces to fight to right such wrongs. This is so despite the fact that we, all of us, live in a sticky web of oppression. We rarely admit this fact, yet we know this through our social interactions. We know that we are not free. What does this mean for social movements? It means we come to them with a psychosocial wound, one that is only exacerbated by the hypnotical lure of power. Think of this. People who come together, organize to build social movements for greater freedom are not free. What does this mean in the real world? I should tell you that I speak today, not merely of today, but of our yesterday, when one of the deepest social movements held sway. Men, usually men, mostly, and women, who never held power, found themselves in powerful political positions in organizations. And more than a few of them abused that power, usually for sexual favors from women. In hindsight, I can see that all of us were oppressed. Even while we were abusing our power, we were abused by a greater power, state power, that killed us in the streets. And as the example of Fred Hampton showed us, in our sleep as well. We must not forget that the abuse of power also led to us killing each other. Panthers killing panthers. The ultimate abuse of power and betrayal of power. Social movements can and must allow for room to grow among each other. For few life experiences will allow better opportunities to work with people such as those drawn social movements. For fundamentally, social movements are peopled by idealists, people who deeply believe that another world is not only possible, but necessary. This means they are called by compassion, feelings for each other, to help build and support each other. These feelings help us really see each other, even our very human failings, in this struggle to change the world. If Huey and Eldridge had more compassion, maybe, just maybe, the party would have survived. We are our brothers and our sisters' keepers. We hold the keys of compassion that can break the bonds of power's abuse. For we are all subject to an oppressive system that seeks to destroy all who seek social change. We must learn from the errors of our past so to not repeat them. I leave you all with two simple but pretty powerful words, compassion and love. These will not fail us. From Imprison Nation, this is your brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
All right. Needless to say, that spoke volumes. I think we played that previously, but we felt the need to play it again because so much is starting to really manifest. For those who do not know, Baba Brother Russell Marone Schultz was, in fact, released, and we are waiting to hear something, hopefully in the next hour, in terms of an update, because we like to wait to get our stuff directly from the sources, and so, you know, we don't want to give you any secondhand information in that regard. We will be able to share with you that there is an event coming up on Tuesday. This is a relatively public event. There's a prayer vigil and so forth here in Philadelphia on Tuesday. I will give you that information shortly because we might be able to Facebook it, or it may already be lined up for Facebook. At any rate, I'll tell you more about that before we close out for tonight. But again, I wanted to kind of revisit some of what Mumia Abu-Jamal said, because it's so very important that we are able to examine our movements. It's important because there are mistakes that have been made. MWM has made mistakes. I think every movement has made some errors because that's a part of growth and development. But it is important that we're able to look at it and learn from it, you see, whereas some look at it and try to hold on to it and then try to crucify you for it and not realize, like everything else, things must grow and develop. And when you're talking about movement stuff, that requires you going through some real pains. You know, you haven't seen one movement that was really for Black people. I'm not talking about the BS stuff. I'm not talking about the makeup stuff. I'm talking about the real nitty-gritty stuff. You have not seen one that didn't go through a very serious time period of trials and tribulations. So we've learned that it goes with the territory. And again, it's important that we learn those experiences. And I'm not even going to say mistakes. No. No, I mean, when you're growing, sometimes it's not about mistakes. It's about that's part of the process. And MWM has now gone through that process. It took us 2 decades to do it, but we're still here. And not only are we still here, we are alive and kicking and getting ready to do some really, really interesting things that we've been working on for a while. It took us longer than we anticipated, but when you really look at it, I've come to realize that that's okay, because there's never been a movement for women and girls of African descent worldwide, not in our lifetime. So when I look at it in that aspect, I realized that, yeah, that had to take a lot of work. And people are not going to see that it did, in fact, take a lot of work. And it's not going to be any confusion about how that work got done, who's doing it, because we've taken good notes about the years. And now we will proceed accordingly. Anyway, we're going to close out tonight and tomorrow with it being National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And with that, of course, we indicated the other evening we are launching our own campaign, which we started several years ago, but now have the other components to it to bring it forward as a national campaign to fight violence and abuse of our women and girls. Now, what we've learned over the years is that, unfortunately, too many of our people have really bought into the system in such a way that most of what you see is connected to the corporations. So we're going to help people to learn that there's a difference between real, authentic work. And I'm not saying that all the work is not sincere or means well or whatever. However, there's a tradition or traditions of Black struggle, liberation, justice, movement stuff. There's a tradition in some of that. And MWM has really fought hard to maintain the kind of integrity that was once present in our fights for liberation. So again, we're going to be able to point out to you the difference between one thing and another. Even though the causes sound really good, if it's just about spinning the wheel, and I'm not even talking about the wheel of fortune, I'm talking about the wheel of white supremacy and all that goes with it, then that's what you have to start understanding and looking at closer. Lastly, before we go into tonight's program, and again, it's going to be really, really powerful, we're going to give some other updates on our political prisoners, which we are obligated to do and love doing it, by the way, because we understand, overstand that a people who do not stand up to say something, do something about the people who stood up for them, then guess what? Not a good thing about those people. And now the persons. So if you have groups and organizations talking about justice and they have not included political prisoners, our political prisoners, not somebody from Jiblip somewhere, but right here in the U.S., if that entity is saying it's about justice and liberation and they're not talking about or doing something about helping to get our political prisoners free, then guess what? Y'all do the math, meaning mental thinking in this manner. What does that tell you? What kind of justice are we talking about if, in fact, the very people who gave their lives and as a result have become incarcerated, what does it say about what kind of justice you're really trying to fight for and for who and for what? So lastly, and then we're going to come to you all, we're going to put this out there to everyone. And again, this is things that make you want to go, And it's this. If there is more emphasis placed on voting, right, and I don't mean voting per se, but what the system is doing in regards to voter suppression, and we have women and girls that are missing by the thousands, we have rapes and even murders of our women and girls that are reported, not just like you're talking about the ones that aren't reported, and the issue of Black women incarcerated. Do you know what's going on with some of that? So here's my point. If it's so important, and it is, don't get me wrong, but if the major emphasis is placed on what the system is doing and is about suppression for voting rights, how come that does not even nowhere near? Why is it that what's going on all over the country with kidnappings, sex trafficking, and so forth of our women and girls in particular, why is there so little said and done about that? Now, that's really a rhetorical question because you already know the answer. But we're here to say, A, no more, meaning enough is enough, no more. So we'll tell you more about that later, which is one of our programs and projects. But for tonight, we're going to also talk about Monday. Monday coming up is what? Most people don't know. Most people don't even care. Well, we care. And we're going to impress upon others to care. And what are we talking about? National Black Solidarity Day. Yep, we're going to talk about that tonight because we think it's important when people talk about what we need to do. Well, we need to unify, or we need to buy black, or we need to do this. But then when you ask them, so what's your plan? Or what are you proposing? Or how do you think we need to do this? Then it's like, well, we just need to come together. Okay, got that part. So where's the how? What's the mechanism? What's the actions? So what we're saying is this. There's enough stuff already in place that we can utilize and get some of this stuff done, i.e. Black Solidarity Day. Black Solidarity Day was started 51 years ago. 51, wait a minute, wasn't 51 yet, 68 I think it was. So over 50 years ago, what did it do? It demonstrated, and people literally did this, by the way, not just in New York, which is where it started, but in other cities, black folks literally took action and did something. What did they do? They didn't spend any money for one day. They did not spend money. So when we talk about what we should do, what we could do, what we need to do, all that stuff, here's a plan of action for one day. Don't spend any money for one day that you really don't have to spend. Now, technically, when Black Solidarity Day was started, it was designed that people did not go to work. To school, they didn't ride the bus, none of that. It was really, you know, to stop the money flow altogether of black folks putting into the system. So, you know, we understand that that might be, for people today, that might be a stretch, okay, because folks are so undisciplined today that the thought of certain things is almost like, you know, Halloween trick-or-treat. Anyway. So what we're proposing as Black Solidarity Day in the 21st century is, if you spend money, at least select somebody black. At least do that. If you have to spend some money on that day, at least attempt to spend it with somebody black. That's the least we can do. Now you figure out of 365 days, we cannot spend money for one of those days. So now all the stuff about what we need to do and we need our own this and all of that, trust me, if a person cannot withhold from spending for one day, then all that other stuff is an illusion. It's an illusion. If you can't be disciplined enough not to spend money for one day. Anyway, National Black Solidarity Day this Monday. Coming. It's every year, has been every year for over 50 years. Some folks in New York still observe it, not so much in other cities. We are putting forth an effort to reinstitute it on a national level. So we're formulating for next year. We're putting it out here now, but for next year, we'd like to have National Black Solidarity Day and committees in every city to coordinate and organize for next year, for November. It's always the day before Election Day. I mean, what a beautiful concept. The day before Election Day for black folks not to spend their money, that sends a serious message. And it creates a unity that we need, that we're all agreeing to do something of an action form. It represents the capability of taking our dollars, doing whatever, so forth and so on. So, again, If anyone is interested in being a part of that, we certainly invite you. We're going to have a session on Monday for Black Solidarity Day that begins to organize for next year for folks who want to start a committee in their city, in their community, so that we're organized for next year. And those things will connect to Black businesses and other kinds of programs in our communities. Okay? So we'll tell you more about that a little later on and also on Monday. Also, for Monday, if you're in Philly, we're using Black Solidarity Day as a day of action. And so we'll be meeting in front of the Octavius Cato statue at City Hall at 3 o'clock. We'll be there on Monday. And with that, we'll be giving out information about different things, but there's also a rally. And the rally is a part of our Recharge Genocide platform because in the city of Philadelphia, it's time that the public schools have, for our students in particular, Black history in the schools. And so we are prepared to begin demanding that. We pay taxpayer dollars too and should have in our schools that many are predominantly Black, there should be real Black history in our schools. And it, you know, that's the least we can try to do. I mean, I'm not for public schools at all. Everybody that knows me knows that. However, I do recognize the fact that our children are there. That's not going to change anytime soon. So what we need to do is at least make sure they get something that represents them. So on Monday, 3 o'clock, those that are interested can come out to the Cato statue. We will begin to start getting the petition signed that we want circulated. Again, this is an educational moment for everyone. It's a process, and it gets people involved. And we'll start with the petition at City Hall, and then we'll end up going over to Broad and Spring Garden where the school district building, main building is. And we will do a short rally there. But it'll kick off the campaign to fight for Black history taught in public schools in Philadelphia with the curriculum that we select, that the community selects. There is several, one in particular, Dr. Ed Robinson, and we want this in the schools. And so as folks did back in the day, they used to do some things back in the day to make their point. And, well, now we're going to see who is serious about making sure that our children are able to get information and at least some kind of education that is relevant to their well-being. So. That's Monday. Lastly, and again, we're going to give you the information about the prayer vigil for Bobo Russell Schultz on Tuesday. We'll give you that information very shortly. Our line guest is going to be joining us soon. When we talk about political prisoners, there are several that a lot of people have not heard anything about, little or nothing about, I'll put it that way. A lot of people, of course, are familiar with Mumia, who we heard opening up program tonight. Also, of course, Iman Jamil Alameen, which we do have an announcement. There is a writing campaign for Iman Jamil Alameen. We'll share that information with you shortly. And then, of course, again, Russell Malone Schultz will share that information. But, of course, others have heard of Dr. Matula Shakur and also Sunda Adi Akoli. So, but there are others. There are others. So tonight we're going to share with you information about another well-known political prisoner in the social political arenas for justice as it pertains primarily to Black folks and those that deal with those issues. And we're going to talk with our sister Virginia Harris, who is going to be joining us. She represents the Rochelle McGee Coalition. And as we said with MWM and the We Charge Genocide 21, we are totally committed in the struggle, in the fight for the freedom of our political prisoners. That's a part of our platform. There's 21 areas, and so you will hear us talk more about those 21. Lastly, next month we begin our pre-tour for the Recharge Genocide 21 as well as the MWM 25, meaning next year is our 25-year anniversary, and we are looking to establish the Black Women's Institute, which will be a physical brick-and-mortar building. That's what we've been working on, family. That's just one of the things. We need our own facility building, because, again, this was never about a day. This was always about the development of a movement and now of society and institution, et cetera. So we'll tell you more about that a little later. But going back to our guest for tonight, our family for tonight, we're going to bring to you information about a political prisoner. And, of course, we're talking about Brother Rochelle McGee. We're going to get you more in tune to what we have to now do as a people, as a community, to look like we got it, got a little more going on than what it appears. And I'm talking to particularly to others. You know, people are looking at us as a people, and oftentimes are laughing. As you all know, we've seen video of that because of different types of behavior and other kinds of things. Well, they need to see some other things, and not that we have to prove anything to anyone, but we do need to do the right thing by and for ourselves. We recently had a tribute to Brother Ken Bridges, and with that, we brought forward the conversation and the concepts of internal reparations. So while some are talking about the external reparation, which we should, what about the internal reparations? And as Brother Ken Bridges and Baba James Cleveland shared, how we treat each other, what we do for each other, the healing that's needed for one another, that's a part of internal repair. So these are some of the things that we need to do in terms of repairing ourselves, and that is taking care of our own business in certain kinds of ways that we can at this point in time. And that, of course, includes freeing our political prisoners and other things, which, of course, we'll elaborate on another time. Okay. Without further ado, we're going to get ready again to talk about the not just the issue, but the reality. I mean, you all think about it for a moment. Those who, if you're not in this category, just think for a moment if you were. If you were so dedicated and committed to fighting for justice for our people, right? And as a result of that, either in your words, in your writings, in your actions, and just your whole posturing or positioning, and as a result of that, which COINTELPRO certainly have shown over and over, which is why for the Recharge Genocide 21, that is a separate area in and of itself. COINTELPRO, the task is a task force on COINTELPRO, because as we present the information and the cases, we want to be able to coincide with the actual stuff that COINTELPRO even said it would do and did do. Anyway, we're going to get ready to talk with our Sister Virginia Harris, who is a part of the coalition to free Rochelle McGee, one of several political prisoners. But again, our job, family, is to have you to be a bit more aware of who some of these brothers and in some cases sisters are, but also to have you more inclined to look at this whole prison issue and this whole government and what it has said it was going to do and did do. When Lumia started off earlier in his commentary, he talked about the murder of Fred Hampton. I mean, there's so many, some names that you are not familiar with. Well, again, we're going to change that and make sure that our people have a real understanding about some of the things that have happened to us. There's 400 plus years of lynching, murder, and all kinds of things that the system have imposed and inflicted. Well, in the past 60 years, You all have seen civil rights stuff that was a little more visible with the dogs and the holes and the, you know, the We Shall Overcome stuff. But what you may not have seen as much of is some of the other stuff. And again, some of that right there was, you know, so brutal. And lastly, a perfect example was the bombing that took place here in Philadelphia, where 60 plus homes went up in flames. And this government in this city literally said, let it burn. So, you know, we got a real clear and almost present day kind of example of some of the horror that our people have endured. And anybody that thinks that's not worth fighting for or about, then, yay, all I can say is good riddance to you. Anyway, let's move on. We're going to talk with our sister, Virginia Harris, and again, introduce those of you who are not familiar with this particular political prisoner, particular case. Of course, feel free to take some notes and certainly be prepared for some action. Sister Virginia, if you are in queue, I need you to press 1 so that I can see you and then open up your mic. And family, I want you to kind of be patient with us here. Okay, I'm not seeing her. So I'm going to assume she's not in queue yet. Oh, no, there you are. Okay, very good. All right, so let's do this. We're going to go, and we're going to open up Sister Virginia's mic and family again. We're going to talk. Oh, hold on one moment. Somehow I lost her. That was strange. Okay, there she is now. All right, so let's do this. We're going to open up her mic and get right with it. And again, family, please feel free to take some notes. And definitely those who are inclined to deal with some action, you're going to get that information too. And so, all right, we're ready to go. And so I'd like to welcome our sister. She's new to the New Day family and certainly not new to the work that we're going to talk about, but it's certainly a pleasure and an honor to have her with us. Greetings, Sister Virginia. How are you this evening?
Revolutionary greetings to you. I want to thank you so much for having me here this evening, and I really appreciate the introduction and the raising of the issue of political prisoners and the detail that you just gave it, and hopefully it will spark some interest and some action on the listeners.
All right. Well, yeah, wonderful, wonderful. That's what I always tell people, too, and they say, well, how you doing? And I'm like, no, every day that I can continue to fight and begin to see a little bit of light down the road in terms of victory, I'm good. I'm going to be good, you know. So I love to be in similar kindred spirit. And certainly from the time that we first talked, I felt that with you. And, you know, I'm looking so forward to what we are going to be doing in the future.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that also.
All right. All right. Well, I'm going to turn the mic over. I'm going to turn the mic over to you. I done said enough. I'm ready to be quiet for a minute, which is not like me, but I'm going to be. And with that, please feel free to share. And again, we are non-commercial, meaning you can say whatever you want to say, whatever way you want to say it. We're not under FCC regulations like that. But we are, you know, listener friendly to some degree. But I'm just saying you don't have to hold any information or try to dress anything up. You can speak freely in whatever way you wish to. So I'm going to turn the mic over to you, and you can start, you know, wherever you like to start. First, if I may, just share a little bit about you, because, again, that's how we like to embrace our family so that, you know, as we are building, we know what skills bank and what other things we are connecting to. So if you'd be so kind, please just share a little about you, and then we're going to go right into the issue.
Okay. My name is Virginia Harris. I live in Southern California, outside of Los Angeles, outside of downtown Los Angeles. I have been organizing here in Southern California for over 40 years. I have been a member of the Black Panther Party. I'm currently a member of Black August Los Angeles, also of Justice Warriors for Black Lives, and of the Coalition to Free Rochelle McGee.
Okay.
I have been a teacher. I taught university out here where I live. I live in a town called Lake Los Angeles, which is about 80 miles northeast of downtown LA. And the major cities are Lancaster, California, Palmdale, California. And I've taught in the local community colleges here for the past 10 years.
Okay.
So I'm an educator and I'm a political activist. And I take my political activism into the classroom because it's definitely an arena that I can share some of the history of our struggle. So the issue we're talking about tonight is political prisoners. And one of the problems with us addressing this issue and the fact that a lot of people don't even focus on political prisoners is because the government of the United States denies that there are actually political prisoners in the country. The United States houses more people or incarcerates more people than any other country in the world. It is the first of the five most incarcerating countries. And it incarcerates people for actual crime. However, it also incarcerates people for speaking the truth or speaking out against the government. So here in the land of liberty, where we are supposed to have freedom of speech, you can still be, or people are still locked away in prisons for expressing dissatisfaction with the government.
Mm-hmm.
Our government. So besides the government denying the reality and existence of political prisoners, prisons themselves, the actual facilities, are usually housed or constructed so far away from the communities where the inmates come from.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes them out of our sight and out of our minds. It also makes it difficult for families to visit because transportation costs. It's because they're outside of the cities where people live. People might need to rent hotel rooms or motel rooms. So all of it's a cost. And the government does that definitely to dissuade people from being in touch or hamper families from being in touch. So people are locked away for years. Their families can't be in touch. Writing letters is difficult. The prison officials read every single letter, every single piece of documentation that comes into the prison. And depending on what people are receiving, it could cause them to be locked in solitary confinement, to have other liberties taken away from them, what basic liberties they might have. So I'm here specifically to talk about Rochelle McGee. And Rochelle McGee is considered the longest held political prisoner in the United States. He has been within the United States prison system for 58 years. It began as a child. However, his incarceration that has resulted in his current housing in the incarceral system, the carceral system, stems from a minor, well, at the time, I guess it was a minor because marijuana has been illegal, but it was a $10 marijuana that ended up causing him to be arrested, and that was in 1973, and locked in prison. And he's been in prison here in California ever since that. It was, in his opinion, and in opinion of witnesses and even district attorneys, that it is an unjustified incarceration. He has tried over the years to appeal it, acting as his own attorney when he can. However, every appeal has been denied. So after spending 7 years, 73 to after spending 7 years in prison, in 1970 in San Marin County, California, Jonathan Jackson, who was the brother of George Jackson, who was also incarcerated in California prisons, went to the Marin County Courthouse during a trial that was being held. And he went there specifically to help liberate some members that were on trial, the Soledad brothers specifically, and his brother George Jackson was one of the Soledad brothers. He brought weapons, and so he armed the inmates who were willing to go with him. And Michelle McGee, although he wasn't involved in the plan, he was a witness for the trial that was going on. So I believe after having been incarcerated unjustly for 7 years, and not even just believe this, so certainly has been expressed, that he took the opportunity to join Jonathan Jackson and try to liberate himself along with the other members, persons that were on trial and witnesses there that day. As a result of this activity, they took the judge, the district attorney, and some jurors as hostages as they tried to leave the courthouse. However, as they were trying to leave the parking lot, the police and guards opened fire on the van that they were in. James McClain was killed, William Christmas was killed, Jonathan Jackson was killed, and the judge was killed. Michelle McGee was severely wounded, as was the district attorney, and Michelle McGee was imprisoned, was returned to prison. He was actually in prison. He was returned to prison, and he was charged with murder because he was associated with the incident. Later, the murder charge was dismissed, and he was subsequently charged with aggravated kidnapping. And he has been in prison since that time on that charge. The Coalition to Free Michelle McGee has been actively seeking to pressure the governor of California, who is Gavin Newsom, to release Michelle on a compassionate release or to commute his sentence, since he has reached the age of 82. We believe that his physical, we do know that his health is deteriorating. So we would like for him to be released to spend the last, you know, his whatever years he has remaining with his family. We know in the United States that the life expectancy of Black men is short. Amazing that he has reached 82 years of old, 82 years of age while he's been incarcerated. But the government of the United States wants to enact the most punitive penalties that they can. So people who are incarcerated are given life in prison with or without the possibility of parole. However, on good behavior, they can be released on parole. Michelle McGee has tried and tried to be released on parole and has been denied each time. We know for a fact that because he wasn't charged with murder but with aggravated kidnapping, his continued incarceration has to be the result of his political activity. The Marin County Courthouse incident did result in not only himself being charged, but with Angela Davis also being charged. They were co-defendants. However, Angela Davis had much more international support. People rallied behind her case, and her case was severed from his. Ultimately, she was acquitted. She represented herself and was acquitted of all the charges. We wonder over the years how come Michelle was not acquitted of the same charges. How come also Michelle has not been able to represent himself, because he's been denied that opportunity? And we could look at it as an attempt of the government to divide and conquer. And we have the beautiful woman and the hard, grizzly man. So everybody rallied behind her and left Michelle to rot away in prison. So the Coalition to Free Michelle McGee is actively trying to get him out of prison. We have a petition campaign to the governor. So far, we've submitted over 1,100 signatures. We also have a letter writing campaign, and we've submitted over 300 letters to the governor demanding that he intervene, look at the case, and be fair. We know that it's difficult for them to be fair, because as I said, retributive justice is what this government is all about. And their desire would be for all prisoners to die in the prisons rather than be released back into the community. We believe that having served 58 years for aggravated kidnapping, more than enough time to have served his or repaid his debt to society.
As
I said, health is deteriorating. It would be a great thing for him to be released to his family. We've already seen that happen recently in the last few days of, you mentioned Russell Schultz. He was released. So it is something that can be done. It is just up to the governors of the states where the political prisoners are, and it is up to the communities where political prisoners come from to rally behind them, as you said earlier, to rally behind them and get them out of prison. Prisons do not stop crime. Prisons nowadays don't even rehabilitate. There are limited educational opportunities, limited work or job opportunities that actually translate to job opportunities that can be done in the actual community once people are released. The charges that that people who are incarcerated incur while they're imprisoned have to be repaid once they're released. So people are released into poverty. They're released back into having nothing. And then we question, why is recidivism so high? So we want to deal with the issue of prison. We want to ultimately abolish the prison system and come up with an alternative to dealing with crime in our communities.
So,
I wanted to read definition, as we ask the question of what are political prisoners, and there are many different opinions of what political prisoners are. I took a definition from the Jericho Movement, from their website, because it pretty much encapsulates what I feel a political prisoner is, and I think it encompasses it's broad enough to encompass opinions of what political prisoners are. So this was written by a gentleman named Bill Dunn, who is a member or was a member of Jericho Movement. He is himself a political prisoner. And he starts off by saying, who are political prisoners or prisoners of war? Briefly, political prisoners and prisoners of war are those incarcerated as a result of political beliefs or action consciously undertaken and intended to resist exploitation and oppression, and or hasten the implementation of an egalitarian, sustainable, ethical, classless society predicated on self-determination and maximization of all people's freedom. Those are political prisoners. And I wanted to use that definition because right now the folks who have been jailed as a result of their participation in the January 6th attack on the White House, on Congress, are calling themselves political prisoners.
And, they're
not political prisoners in the sense that we're talking about prisoners. They were arrested for crimes that they actually committed. Political prisoners that we're talking about are incarcerated because of their beliefs or their actions that stemmed from their beliefs, which were against exploitation, against racism, against sexism, against homophobia, Islamophobia, and all the other phobias that people have who are talking about changing society to create a more egalitarian or equal or harmonious society that all people are included in. The folks from the January 6th efforts to overthrow the government want to overthrow the government to make sure that white supremacy and the white ideal is maintained. Totally different from the political prisoners that we're talking about. So we're not talking about them, about the prisoners at all. So I just wanted to read that quote just to get that on the record, that that is the distinction that we make when we talk about political prisoners. If you have any questions specifically that you want to ask me, what I want to do right here is, before I forget, is to give you the information, give the listeners information to be able to participate in our effort and our campaign. Our Facebook, to reach us on Facebook and to read any information on Rochelle's case on Facebook, folks would reach it through RochelleMcGee.org. And for if people wanted to send an email, send an email to freerochellemcgee@gmail.com. As I said, we have a petition campaign and we have a letter writing campaign. We are pressuring the governor. We're pressuring the Los Angeles District Attorney. The new District Attorney in Los Angeles claims to be fair. He claims to be for equal justice. And he has actually made steps toward making it a little bit easier to address some of the political prisoners that have been incarcerated. But he's still the district attorney, so you know we have to take a lot of things with a grain of salt.
Right.
So, also want people to know that Rochelle McGee would love to receive letters, and any political prisoner, and actually anybody who's incarcerated, the contact from home is priceless. It goes without saying that the better we can keep in contact, the easier it is for people to endure the time that they are locked down. When they can receive letters and care packages from home, money on their commissary, or whatever other kind of help people can give. So writing people that are incarcerated, especially writing political prisoners, we need to be careful about what we say, because sometimes our words, even though we are meaning them to uplift the folks that we're writing to, can cause them to be locked in solitary confinement, to have their commissary privileges taken away, library privileges taken away, exercise privileges taken away. So if you're writing, do not write about the movement. Don't write about George Jackson, Black August, Black Lives Matter, things that that the government feels people who are locked away should be denouncing. One of the problems that our prisoners have is that they refuse to denounce their solidarity with the movements outside. So as long as they refuse to do that, the government's like, well, okay, well, you have to stay inside, because if you come out, you're going to be talking about that at rallies, and we can't have that. So they want to keep folks locked away to prevent the continued discussion of having a revolution and changing the government that we have to something that is not so full of wealthy people, and that is, I said earlier. So we do want to write them about great uplifting things that happen in the neighborhood. Say there's a great community garden going and folks from the neighborhood are getting fresh fruits and vegetables. That's a great thing to write about. Maybe you went, I'm telling listeners, maybe they went on a hike somewhere, and so, and it's it's fall, and the beautiful color of the leaves changing. Things that keep them in touch with reality, technology that's developing, so that when folks come out, they aren't surprised by all these new gadgets and things that they haven't seen. Rochelle McGee, 58 years, all of the things he's missed, There are no longer telephone booths. There are no longer the big TVs with the big picture tubes in the back. There are so many things that have changed in the 58 years that he's been incarcerated. And same thing with other folks that are that they come out and have no idea how to assimilate. So write about those kind of things. But keep it uplifting. Try not to write things that are provocative so that we can keep folks in trouble. Mm-hmm. So to write Michelle McGee, we would write him at Michelle Sinque McGee, number 892051, number T115, California Medical Facility, Post Office Box 2000, Vacaville, which is V-A-C-A-V-I-L-L-E, Vacaville, California, 95696-2000. We could ask him about his well-being, ask questions, ask him about his passions, his interests, what does he do, what books is he reading, things like that. But just be careful about using explicit language and related to the movement that would incite.
And I think I'm really glad that you said all of that, because it points out once again, as we're connecting the black dots, as we say, that when we say political prisoners, and it's not to say, again, that others do not go through, you know, certain kinds of atrocities inside of these places, these modern-day plantations and so forth. But our political prisoners are, from what we've been able to examine, are a bit more prone or a bit more targeted for cruelty, and particularly when it comes to being tortured in one way or another. And as you mentioned, solitary confinement, for one, other kinds of mental, kinds of jabs and things of that nature. So the whole prison system, of course, is horrific. However, the reality of our political prisoners, from what we've been able to research and get, tends to be even more severe. And so we want to point that out to everyone. Yeah, please, go ahead.
Well, you know, you're right, because it is more severe. They don't just get locked in solitary confinement. Sometimes the guards beat the crap out of them. Sometimes the guards set them up to be beaten up by other prisoners. Sometimes the guards set up situations where they're killed by other prisoners or even killed by the guards themselves. So absolutely, it is a horrendous condition, a situation to be in. And it's always their word against the institution. So we need to get folks out of there. There is no question about that. And particularly our elders who have been in there forever, like Michelle McGee, who have certainly done their time and have acknowledged what they've done and the fact that, I've done my time. I want to use the example of Sirhan Sirhan, who is up for potential parole. Sirhan Sirhan killed Robert Kennedy, is alleged to have killed Robert Kennedy, and he's up for parole.
Wow.
Michelle McGee didn't kill anyone. So why is he not up for parole? So it's a good question. And there are other folks who have been released, and we think compassionate release, commutation of the sentence, something can be done to get Michelle McGee out and get him to spend some quality time with his family. For if he lived to be 100, still great. He needs to be out of prison.
Wow. All right, family, you heard it right here. Again, we're talking with our sister, and, of course, Sister Virginia Harris, and she's representing or very much a part of the Rochelle McGee coalition based there in California. If you have some questions or comments or some other thoughts, feel free to share them now. You can press 1, and we'll certainly bring you into the conversation. Again, these dialogues are informative, educational, et cetera, but it's also about action. Our program is not just about us huffing and puffing about stuff. It's also about making sure that folks do something. And again, there are things that anyone can do to send a card, a stamp and an envelope with some words, you know, doesn't have to be a lot of words, just, you know, thinking of you, it's just something. These are things that anyone can do. And of course we heard that there's a letter campaign and so forth. So these are things that will not require a whole lot from anyone. And family, come on. I mean, we got to do better. This is, like, ridiculous. For people to be in prison for 60 years, we really need to step it up. I mean, come on. How much is that going to take from someone to sign something, to send a letter, to send a card? Again, if you have any questions or comments, we certainly will welcome them, good, bad, or indifferent. So, you know. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, my sister.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I would like to add, though, with regard to writing, mm-hmm. when people do write, folks that are incarcerated, if anything happens in the writer's life that would cause them to stop writing temporarily or not be able to write for whatever reason, try to let the person you're writing to know. And I'm saying this because mm-hmm. I was writing to someone who was incarcerated, mm-hmm. and some things did happen in my life that caused me to stop writing temporarily. Mm-hmm. I didn't let the person when things settled down in my life and I was started to write again, I found out he had died.
Wow.
That's, you know, and I hold that, and I feel responsible. I feel a little bit of guilt because he enjoyed getting letters from me, and I enjoyed writing. To the period of time that I was not writing was the extensive period of time, and mm-hmm. I'm sure he was wondering what was going on. However, his health was poor, and ultimately he did die while mm-hmm. still incarcerated. So, and the feeling is I'm really disappointed in myself because mm-hmm. of that. Mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't hold a whole bunch of guilt about it, but I do because he was a human being, and I felt down. So I'm saying this only because I don't want people to have the same feeling. So don't let people down once you start communicating mm-hmm. with them. Stay in touch with them. Do what you can mm-hmm. to keep in touch. If something happens that you can't, let them know that you're going to be out of communication for a while, and that way they won't be expecting mm-hmm. to hear from you and point at them.
Okay. All right, and that is, of course, you know, if in fact there is a kind of a continuation of writing or what have you, so surely. Okay, doesn't seem like anyone have any questions or comments. I'm shocked. I usually have at least a few people that got something to say. Wow. What, was everybody shocked or something? I mean, because some of this is kind of like, what? But, yeah, this is what is going on, has been going on. And even with Barbara Russell and Rousseau, I mean, how many years was that? It was 50 years. So, this is what's going on, family. And, you know, I'm going to say this because I can and I feel like I must. Somebody has to and most are not. And it's this. People wait, unfortunately, until stuff happens to them, to someone in their family. Or someone that they're close to. This is what's going on today. It used to be folks that were involved in what people call social justice issues, people that were involved in the movement, the struggle years ago, often did so because they felt they should. They felt and believed that there was a responsibility. they felt and believed that our ancestors deserved that from them, not just because it happened to them personally. Yes, I said it. Somebody needs to say these things, obviously, because, you know, folks are gravitating to things in such a way that, you know, the genuineness for me is really not in a good place. And so we have to begin, and don't get me wrong, we know that tragedy does, in fact, has its place, and it will, you know, do what it do, but we're saying to do the right thing because you know it's the right thing. That's the bottom line. Okay.
Part of the problem that I see is that a lot of people feel that the movement of the 70s, 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s was unsuccessful and have become disillusioned. Part of that was the result, clearly, of the government's involvement in destroying that movement. However, our movement did not end. Our movement continues. Our movement has ebbs. It ebbs and flows. So sometimes there are massive uprisings, such as what happened during the summer of 2020 after George Floyd was killed, massive uprisings around the world. Sometimes there's hardly anything happening that people can really notice, but the movement goes on. There's your organization. There are other organizations that are doing the work in the communities and trying to build it up from the ground up. So the movement does continue, but it does require, as you said, folks doing something. And doing something doesn't mean that you're out there just trying to make $1 billion. You're trying Elon Musk, you know, or trying to be. But $1 million is not going to, or billions of dollars is not going to, for an individual person, is not going to benefit the entire, our entire people. We need to be focused, like you said. We need to be involved because we know it's the right thing to do, not because we're going to get some notoriety out of it, not because well, the notoriety is one of the reasons why people become involved politically. But we want to do it because it is the right thing to do, because the commitment we have is to make our lives better, to make our lives better, our children's lives better. We want, in America, this is where we live, so we want to have a life in America. We want to be able to, certainly specifically as Black folks in America, to be able to go outside our homes, drive in our cars, not worry if somebody, if the police are going to pull us over and kill us, not worried if some maniacal redneck white supremacist is going to follow us home and try to kill us, or we're at a demonstration and they're going to attack us. We need to change our society. We need to have the freedom to go where we want to go. We need to have the freedom to vote. You talked earlier in the program about the voter suppressions that are going on around the country. It's 2021. We are now addressing the issue of voter suppression. Folks should be able to go vote whenever they want, where they want, anytime they want, for whomever they choose, and it shouldn't be an issue because that's part of the so-called democratic society. Yeah. We shouldn't be worried that, they have to renew the Voting Rights Act. Come on, why do we have Voting Rights Act? White folks don't have a Voting Rights Act. They get to go vote, but we have to have an amendment to the Constitution to give us the right to vote. That's just insane.
It is.
So we're talking about all of that, where everybody has the right to vote, where everybody has the right to education. Folks have a right to homes and they don't have to live in the streets. Folks have a right to decent employment where they can afford to have homes so they don't have to live in the streets. We're talking about that. We're talking about the 1% or the 0.1% or however they are. Those folks have got to go. The squandering of all those billions of dollars while people are left poor, people are left to commit crimes for food and housing that ends them up in prison. Here in Los Angeles, they have decided to criminalize, and I know it's happening around the country, to criminalize homelessness. So folks can't sleep in parks, they can't sleep on bus benches, they can't sleep, and if they're caught, they're going to get put in jail. What kind of country are we living in where homelessness is criminalized instead of homes being built for people. It's just an insane thing. So,
and particularly, let me just sidebar for a moment, because we've done research in seven cities, at least seven cities, in terms of gentrification. And so all of these cities have properties that could have been utilized. Many of them are now torn down. Many of them are still worn down. And the point is, with the homelessness piece, these are properties that could have been utilized. And these cities intentionally created this thing called blight, because legally, once in an area you have X amount of property or X amount of acreage that can, that's considered blight, they can then issue eminent domain. They can then start putting in their city plans, et cetera, et cetera. We've researched this stuff. And again, this system clearly. But the question always for me now gets to, so what are folks going to do? What are we really looking at doing in addressing this stuff?
Well, like we said, one of the things people need to do is get together. So there are many organizations. There's Black August, Los Angeles. Black August actually is around the country, so people can Google it and find out. There's your organization, MWM. There are countless organizations that people can join, because people need to get together. People can't, we can't be successful as individuals. And because organizations already exist, why reinvent the wheel when we can go participate with organizations that already exist and build them up? Because a lot of these organizations have scant or, you know, minimal membership. Join these organizations. I'm sure there are organizations that anyone can find their affinity with. So whatever their political beliefs are, their religious beliefs are, their social beliefs are, I know that there are organizations that people can participate with that will help them change their communities and help us build a larger movement that can change society as a whole.
Absolutely. I'm just going to share a quick sidebar. I see that we do have a couple of people that finally, you're finally coming in, family, with some questions and comments. So we're going to come to you in a few moments. I knew that was going to be, somebody was coming with something. So just stay right there for a moment. I just want to share a little sidebar, though, with Sister Virginia to just show you how, on another angle, how the system now kind of does what it do. For example, for our 20-year anniversary, we brought forward a component, a unit of MWM called A Million Black Women Rising Federation, because we were structuring ourselves to proceed in a manner that was not just, you know, an organization type, but more leaning towards, you know, an independent government or something similar. You know, we wanted to do something different. So we put out there, and we began building A Million Black Women Rising Federation. The acronym is AMBER Federation. Well, this was 2017. So we've been organizing over the years in that manner, independently, by the way. Do you know that in 2020, a well-known group of black women made an announcement that they were partnering with none other than Saks Goldman? And guess what the name of their project was, or is? A Million Black Women.
Oh.
Ours is A Million Black Women Rising Federation. Theirs is A Million Black Women. And they're partnering with Saks Goldman, who have pledged to give them, now, listen to this, y'all, to show you how the game has gone up to a degree. If y'all don't understand what time it is now, you will not know. But Goldman Sachs has given this group $10
billion. Oh, my goodness.
Billion. I'll send it to you. Because we looked at it and we said, no, this is a typo. No, they've pledged $10 billion. See, these people know that their time is coming, and they know they have to get rid of anything that even remotely looks like it is going to deal with resistance. And so they create stuff. And this is one of the top leading black women's organizations in the country.
Wow.
Okay? And we'll talk more about this at another time, but I want to point out how, if not COINTELPRO in the manner that we knew it in the 20th century, let me show you how some of it operates in the 21st century with the Kool-Aid touch to it.
That was the Boulay touch.
Oh, that's right. That was the Boulay touch.
So what you're saying, though, is that Goldman Sachs has a way to divide and conquer by giving billions of dollars to this one black female or women's organization, when that women's organization could have joined forces with your organization.
But see, that's the whole point. That was the buy-off. See,
it could never be
about independence. Right. And
exactly.
they know that there's thousands of 501c3s out there. So this program will also provide funds to other black women's groups, but they are 501.
Mm-hmm.
So this enables them to create this whole. It's very interesting. I mean, you got to admit, it's interesting. So, but what they don't know is that being the mother that we are, we've come up with the counter situation. And so, for our 25-year anniversary, we are contacting the 50 top black-owned companies in America, and we're saying to them, do business with the righteous USA. And this is what we're saying, the black businesses that are, that make a lot of money, right? There's some out there. And we're saying, do business with the real and the righteous USA. You know who that is? United Sisters of Africa. And we're saying this to black diasporic businesses, that we want to do business with them. Will you do business with us? So they can go do business with Sachs Goldman. That's fine. We opt to do business with our own folk. See? So you want to play? Let's play. Let's play. And so with that, we're asking, preparing to meet with several entities, and with that, we're looking at working on affordable housing, just like what we just talked about. Yeah. Again, with these properties, thousands of properties, et cetera, that are all over the country, why can we not partner with some of our own black businesses? They thought we were stupid. They got a big surprise. Anyway, our folks are waiting online, so let's go, caller. We thank you all for tuning in and for coming in. So we're going to go to caller. You are at 9498. Thank you for holding. Your mic is open. Welcome to the 7 and New Day.
Good evening, Sister Filet. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Ray.
Can you hear me?
How's my brother? Yep, I can hear
Hello.
You.
Hello. It's good to hear from you. Good to hear from Philadelphia. Thank you for the speaker. I remember I was listening to Deruba Ben-Wahad, and he did a lecture at the O'Berry Dempsey, and he was talking about the sacrifices in the different ways that political prisoners did time compared to the regular population. It would be cold, and they would leave the windows open. And you sort of feel real bad Nelson Mandela didn't even, when the Lambe Braff wanted to have him sit next to Nelson Mandela, they didn't even want Daruba to sit next to Nelson Mandela when they put him in Yankee Stadium. But you're right. Regular inmates doing time is much different than political prisoners doing time, and from what they sacrificed, they gave up a lot.
Yes.
And at a time when we was trying to make some real critical moves. And that's why sometimes I would get into the fact where we was talking about people making, you know, comedians and this and that. And at that time, they wasn't talking too much bad stuff about black folks because they know some of them organizations was going to see them. They wasn't saying nigger 50 million times in comedians, even though Richard Pryor did it. But
he stopped, and he made a conscious decision to stop saying nigger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they sacrifice a lot, and they're getting pushed over. Except when a lot of people, you know, Momia gets support all over the place, but there's a lot of people that don't get support. And they rot in jail. And they pay a tough price from regular population. So, like Sister Filet does, and she says, what are we going to do? She do a lot because at 10:30 at night on the Saturday, she doesn't have to do what she has to do week after week, week after week, week after week. It takes a lot to get ready to do a program week after week. Of course, you got to get ready for the next week because you only got 1 week. People do stuff and we try, but a lot of times the media, they just try to forget about them. So you're doing a lot and keep up the good work, and they do a lot of hard time. Not like the regular population that could get favors. And like you said, they give somebody a pack of cigarettes or a pint of liquor to do you in. They could sneak stuff in. The guards could sneak stuff in the prisons. And you're a political prisoner. Influence on the population is very powerful, and they don't want that influence to move on to the regular population where they wake up. So they suffer a lot. So, you know, thank you what you do. And thanks, Sister Filet, and all of us that try to do our part in this wicked system.
Thank you, Brother Ray Rowe. Much respect, much love. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Sister Filet. All right.
All right. Okay, let's go to caller. You are at 6592. Caller at 6592. Welcome to this segment of New Day, and your mic is open.
Hey, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I just wanted to talk about that Goldman Sachs information. I did get that information on yesterday, and I was quite excited about it, but I would like more information on that if you have it.
Well, I mean, you can go right to the website. It got more information than I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I didn't detail it or anything like that, but I just briefly saw that yesterday. So that's funny you mentioned that tonight.
And so it's confused. See, this happened before, meaning when you started hearing about the Women's March, right? Well, initially, they literally tried to call it Million Women March. And so this is why we tell people to be very careful, because we're the Million Woman, W-O-M-A-N, just like the brothers were the Million Man. They weren't the Million Men. They weren't the Million Mans with an S. So over the years, we've had people try to play these little tricky games to make it seem like it's us, those that came together in 1997, 2.5 million, black women, straight up, no chaser. So over the years, you heard these variations, and it's trickery because the average person might not pay attention and notice that the million women march. So the white women initially, that's what they tried to call what they did in, 2018 or whatever it was. Listen, sisters all over the country said, y'all out of y'all freaking minds. And we, of course, issued a cease and desist order. So they ended up changing it to the Women's March. But initially, they were going to try to call that million something, and we shut them down. So what's happening now is because they know that we're getting ready for our 25-year anniversary, and they know the impact that grassroots, from the grassroots through the glass ceiling, they know that we are totally inclusive. We encompass every area of black women, from Nakisha on the corner to Marianne in the boardroom. They know this. But see, these other groups, they ain't got that kind of range. They don't have no street credibility. We do. We have street credibility along with professional and blah, blah, blah. You name it, we got it. So they had to try to create something that for a distraction. So remember, Sass Goldman was under investigation. And in order for them to get the heat off of them, they then saw the opening to pull black women in, because one of the questions I asked earlier before we got into all of this, I said earlier on, why is it that black women do not support black women's groups, organizations, projects, and so forth, unless it's sanctioned by white folks? All over the country.
You know, I think
if you look through it, yeah, but let me just say this part. Last part to that is, notice, take a good look, y'all. You will see that I'm telling you the truth because I researched it. 90% of black women's organizations throughout the U.S., and no, most of them are not national. They're within a certain region, not national. The ones that are national are connected to the corporations, other similar entity, the government or what have you. 90%. Now, why is that? Why did Biden and Kamala Harris both say that black women were very instrumental in them getting in office? So that transformed for Sass Goldman as, this is a good way for us to do three things in one time. One, get black women in such a way that they become our new kind of prostitute. Yes, I said it. Okay. Because you're going to throw all the money at them, and if you think they ain't going to jump at that money, you're out of your mind. Plus, you get a head group organization that has a history and has done good work over the years, but not without the corporations, by the way. You get them to head it up, lesser-known groups and organizations, and those groups and organizations become beholden because they don't $10 billion, and they're going to get a little chunk of piece of that? Shoot. You got a little bit of loyalty for a minute. Anyway, I digress. This is the game that's now being played, though. So what we're telling people is next year is our 25-year anniversary, and we are very transparent, meaning you will not see no corporation on none of our stuff, none of it. Mm-hmm. And if you see that, it ain't us. It's not us. You know, unless it's black. Because we have to do business now in the 21st century, but we are selective with who we do business with. And it won't just be any black. It'll be black that's trying to do something. Okay, but we'll go into that later. But my point is, these people are very calculating, as we all know. And anytime you have a group of people who intentionally go get some other people and then enslave them, that should tell you right there that they do any damn thing. And they do, and they have, and they will. So my sister, I'm going to say this to you again, just, and I'll see if I can find it while before we close out. But go to the website. It will give you
everything. Okay, I just found something on it.
Yeah, it'll give you everything that you think you might even want to know. But be real clear. Be real clear. That is a very shrewd game because they know that folks need money, and they're going to make sure that they get it. But you best believe you will not be saying anything too political, and you will be dealing with someone else's agenda. See, our agenda, for Million Women March, Universal Movements, we tell everybody straight up, we are not dealing with diversity beyond a certain point, meaning we have allies, we work with anyone, but our work is exclusive. It's exclusive. People of African descent, of black African descent, because you got some white folks that are born in Africa and they say Africa too. So we make it even clearer. We say of black African, and if you don't like that, that's fine. That's your business. But we reserve the right claim and a position that we feel is for us to do, period. And that's why we've never had a grant and never had corporate sponsoring, because I can say that. See? So,
I want to say,
thank you for, go ahead, sister, go ahead.
I wanted to say about our disunity, though, as black folks, we don't even speak to each other when we pass each other on the street. And that's just real basic, and it just infuriates me that we walk past each other, ignore each other, roll our eyes at each other, or challenge each other, what you looking at, kind of thing, when we're supposed to be unified, and we should be able to at least speak to each other on the street and show that we have some sense of togetherness as a people. But we don't even have the basic togetherness of being able to speak to each other when we walk past each other on the street. We have to start at that basic level. We need to recapture our unity as a people where we embrace each other just to the point of speaking to each other when we see each other on the street. It is just the most disheartening thing to me when I speak to someone and they ignore me. You know, I don't get angry at them and go, oh, you can't speak. They're not going to speak. But that's just a basic human quality, a way of connecting to each other. It's just saying hello, what's happening, how are you, what's going on, however you want to say it. Keep on walking, but make the acknowledgement. How hard is that for us to just acknowledge each other on the street or wherever we are in the course of our day? How can we build a movement when we can't even speak to each other? And then it's just infuriating.
And you're right, but unfortunately, see, I'm a realist, and not just a realist, but I examine this stuff. Here's what's happening, and what is going to happen even more so. The social media situation is there for a reason. And what people now do is use that to do the majority or a lot of their communications. I only use Facebook when I need to post stuff. But whenever I go on Facebook, I see all these conversations of people that I know really well. And they're sitting on there having conversations with each other. Oh, yeah, today I da-da-da-da-da. And, oh, look at my bag. And da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, do y'all have lives? Really? This is what you're doing all day? So my point is this. This system has figured out, what you said is true, but it's going to get worse. Because what COVID did, it added to the already existing of social distancing. And so black folks now, we have, first of all, we've been duped so much by charlatans. See, again, the movement had a genuineness to it years ago. I loved it. You could feel it. After COINTELPRO and other stuff, that stuff dissipated, and it wasn't that the movement failed, like, you know, what Sister said earlier about some people think it. That's y'all's hallucination, okay? It didn't fail. When you're in a war, there's some battles that you lose. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point is this, that what we're looking at now is going to get worse. Did you hear this week where, what's his name, Facebook dude, Zuckerberg, whatever his name is, did you hear what his next bit? They can really create a total alter ego, not ego, reality of a whole other kind. This is going to get worse. So as black folks, as Africans, what we have to now do is come up with that's why I'm now looking at similar and like minds to at least begin some processes that we can keep intact. And as things get worse, that'll be intact, and then hopefully it'll draw people to us. But that nucleus, that group, you, I, those who are listening, Brother Ray Ray, we're on a similar or same, as some say, frequency. We will have to harness that and embrace it and bring forward what we need to bring forward for this day and age, for the 21st century. And it's going to be different. It's got to be different because what's the saying? That a definition for insanity, one of the definitions for insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. So that's why in bringing forward a movement for our women, it is not to counter our men. It is not to try to impede or override them or anything like that. It's to put something in the game that ain't in the game. Like that. Because most women's groups and organizations is manipulated under the auspices of the white supremacist system. They ain't talking about the mother of civilization. They can't. They can't hold on to that. We can. You see. So, again, I'm saying we have to come up with the formulas and the strategies for this day and age. Because this thing right here, right now, is going to get worse. And we need to notice that it's going to get worse. And and again, the mere fact that a woman or a girl of African descent can be raped in any community, and I attracted over these years, it'll get some energy for about 2 weeks. It'll get some hoopla or, yeah, we angry, or, yeah, no, for about 2 weeks. And after that, it's back to business as usual. Lastly, what's going on with Breonna Taylor's case, y'all?
Nothing.
George Floyd has a bill in the house. George Floyd, I mean, I'm not trying to compare or anything. I'm just saying, for real, y'all, y'all see this? I ain't heard Breonna, except I just talked to Brother Justin earlier. And he hooked me up with Sister Brianna's aunt, which I've just been on him for like 2 months to do. But my point is, until we had that conversation earlier today, I ain't heard anybody talking about no Breonna Taylor. How's that? Anyway, is this Sister Tanya on this line that I'm talking with?
Yes, I am.
I thought I recognized
yes,
the
I
voice.
Am.
Hey, sis. Okay, get back. Okay, I got you. All right, but yeah, but my sister Virginia, this is going to get, listen, these young girls, see, I walk these streets. I get on the buses, I get on the trains, because I want to be in tune and in touch. And I watch these young girls, 12, 13, 14, 15, I watch what they're saying out their mouth, I watch what they're doing, I watch with the eyelashes, they look like they're about ready to fly away somewhere. And the bedroom slippers, that they wear in the street, like it's regular shoes. Oh yeah, this stuff is going on, y'all. I'm saying it, and
yeah,
it's real. You understand?
Yeah.
And if black women don't, you begin to say, "Yo, sis, let me talk to you for a minute." I mean, in an organized manner too. Because we're not doing that. In some are, don't get me wrong, of course some of our sisters are, but other women are
organize on a national level. They have an agenda. Agenda do black women have that's not connected to the Republican or the Democratic Party? So, sisters, I'm telling you, and again, brothers, those that know what we're talking about, y'all know we ain't talking about excluding y'all or nothing like that, but at some point, it's got to be women's work. Wasn't that a song? Women's work? Yeah, okay. He was cute, too. I liked him. Anyway, so what I'm saying, come on, at some point, you know, Harriet Tubman got to come in. Yaa Fatawa, Makeda, Nzinga, Hatshepsut. At some point, that has to happen, y'all, and the time is now. The time is now. And it's not to try to discredit or push anybody out of the way. It's just to bring forward another vibration and another energy that's not there right now, and it was there before.
Yeah.
And we can't let that go. We can't let it dissipate. Anyway. All right, Sister Tanya, thank you for your comments. And, you know, I'll be talking to you later on this week because, you know,
oh,
yes, come now,
yes,
down your way anyway.
Yes,
all
ma'am.
Right.
Can't
you,
wait for
sister.
That.
Oh, yeah. Oh, as they say here in Philly, we on the move.
Right.
Although I think Dr. King actually said it first. But anyway, all right. All right, then, let's see if we have anyone else that has a comment or a thought for us. We certainly appreciate your comments, most definitely. And by the way, we also appreciate any donations that you might want to make. You know, we don't usually say that often or whatever, every now and then, because, you know, we try not to, you know, do what we do and then ask for money. That's what most people do. But that's not our program. We haven't done that. At least we don't do it often, periodically. But we do remind you, if you do wish to, it's fine. It's cool. Our cash app is $HOT1111. We have membership now available, and we'll be more than happy to share that with you if you email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. And, of course, we have a journal that's coming out. We had to extend the ad for the journal because we thought folks would support that. Again, you know, your signature ad was only $10 to put your signature in of best wishes or continued success or what have you. So we've extended the time again, and so it's called a mandala. That's what Mother Winnie Mandela said when she came and spoke at the Million Woman March. That was one of the key words that she stressed upon us, and that's what our journal is called, the mandala. So if you want more information about that, you can email us again at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. We're getting ready for MWM 25, so we will have T-shirts and hats and buttons and posters and all of that ready for you. We already have buttons and posters. So again, if you email us, we will certainly send you what we have available. Okay. All right. And we also have PayPal, so you can use that as well. And that PayPal also facilitates our Black Human Rights Movement. And of course, that's the We Charge Genocide 21. All right. That's my little sidebar for you on that. All right, so again, if there's any questions or comments, if not, we're going to get ready to close out for tonight. We have with us our sister Virginia Harris has joined us and shared a lot of information about one of our political prisoners. And, you know, it is so important when you hear Black August. Of course, you oftentimes hear the names George Jackson, Jonathan Jackson, and so, you know, I think it's really a blessing to be able to also put additional pieces together to the story, which is what we've heard tonight. And we're going to continue to share this kind of information to give you whatever updates. Oh, by the way, before I forget, Brother Shep, thank you, Brother Shep. He made sure that we had this information. Maroon is out of prison and back home in Philly.
spread the word for folks to come out on Tuesday, November the 2nd at 3 o'clock. Again, family, Tuesday, November the 2nd at 3 o'clock. They're asking people to dress in white. And they'll be at Malcolm X, or we'll be at Malcolm X Park here in Philadelphia, which is located at 52nd Street off of Vine between Spruce. It says, give thanks for the return of Russell Maroon Schultz to the community. And this is a prayer gathering as well as, you know, just a gathering. Let me see, they're going to have prayers, they're going to have some cultural performances and so forth. Again, 52nd and Pine here in Philadelphia, wear white. And it's November the 2nd, which happens to be Election Day here, by the way. And it's from 3 to 6 p.m., okay? They don't have – oh, wait a minute. Yeah, they do. They have a Linktree. So if you go to Linktree, push in Free Maroon Now, you'll be able to see it wherever you are, okay? So, again, Linktree, you go to that and then / Free Maroon Now, and then you'll be able to be a part of it. Even if you're not in Philly, you can still be a part of it. Okay, so that is the announcement that just came in. And there is one more. Hold on with me. There is an announcement for Iman Jamil Alameen. And thank you, Baba Bilal Sunni Ali, for that. And again, you know, one of our positions and roles here is to assist in whatever way possible the Jericho Movement and the other defense or freedom fighting groups, organizations, of course, such as the Rochelle McGee Coalition. We're here to provide whatever assistance and service that we can. These are the lead organizations, and we respect their work. And again, our role is to support in whatever way. And, of course, just to give you another backup, you can visit the Free Rochelle McGee site by going to freerochellemcgee.org and also Facebook, Free Rochelle McGee, okay? Both there on Facebook, and then that's the website. The announcement for... The announcement for the virtual letter writing campaign. This is for Iman Jamil Alameen. And for those who are not familiar with that name, you may be familiar with the name H-Rap Brown. H-Rap Brown, also known today in the way that he wished to be known perhaps a bit more, and that is Iman Jamil Alameen. This will take place on Saturday, November the 13th. From 3 p.m. Eastern Time, I'm sorry, Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time starting at 3 and 4, okay? It doesn't say what time it ends. But at any rate, this is going to be, looks like, on Zoom. And also you can go to freeimanjamil.com, okay? That is where you can plug in, and it's another, let's see, it's another address here. It's not coming up clear, though. But at any rate, if you go to the Free Iman Jamil, you'll be able to get information there. And we'll repeat this again next week. I'll have more information next week for you because it's not until November the 13th. So we'll definitely have more information. In fact, we may even have Brother Jihad or Brother Bilal Sunni Ali might be joining us between now and then. Okay, so that's the updates on that. Lastly, of course, Mumi Abu-Jamal, there's no recent or additional things that we know except that he is still, you know, not as in the best of health. And so, of course, you know, there's continual prayers and love for him, out for him as well. All right, family, so let me just check to see if there's any more questions or comments. If you do have one, you can press 1, and if not, we're going to go back to our sister, Virginia Harris, and get some closing comments from her. And again, we thank all of you for tuning in to this session of New Day. I want to remind you, again, we will be in Detroit. We'll be doing a town hall meeting and also an organizing meeting for both the We Charge Genocide 21 and MWM 25. The town hall meeting, it'll also be a conference of reparatory justice in Detroit on, again, November the 20th will be at the Cass Commons, in Detroit. It'll start at 1 o'clock, from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. And there'll be workshops on human rights. Of course, the We Charge Genocide 21, what it is, why it is, how you can get involved. There'll be testimony because we're going to be starting to record information. You know, of course, in Detroit, that we call that gentrification ground zero because the gentrification there is like, you just can't even believe that one. So we'll be talking about that in Detroit as well as the water situation. Thousands of people had their water shut off in Detroit. And some of it was because they were like a dollar short on their bill, and people turned their water off. This is the kind of stuff going on. Of course, from Detroit, we're looking, of course, at Flint. The water is still unsafe there. The water has still made folks ill there in Flint. So these are the things we will be documenting as a part of our environmental racism platform piece for the We Charge Genocide 21. So we'll be doing that in Detroit again on the 20th. Then the next day, we're in Chicago. Okay, same thing. And we will be at the restaurant known as Soul Vegetarian. We'll be in Chicago doing a full day of, again, bringing boots on the ground, to the ground, in the hood, so that our people know what we're talking about, so that we're not talking to each other all the time. We want our people to hear and ask questions and get familiar with the language, with the jargon, with the platform of We Charge Genocide 21 and other things. Lastly, call to Black veterans. There'll be a special Zoom meeting coming up for Black veterans who want to be a part of the We Charge Genocide 21. Guess what? From the time of the Civil War, y'all ain't got what y'all supposed to get. In fact, they done really did the do for those who were victims of Agent Orange and other things, for those who ended up coming home, not being able to get a job, not being able to get any housing, medical care. I think y'all have some voices that needs to be heard, and we have the platform for you. Therefore, we met with a couple of veterans today. We met with the organization here in Philly. And so they're coming on board, but now we're going all over the country. Black veterans, we have a forum just for you come next year when we do the summit. So it's up to you to organize it and bring your issue to the forefront so that we can be ready to present this in 2024 as a part of the International Decade for African People. That most folk here in the U.S. don't know nothing about, that the United Nations declared in 2015 the International Decade for African People. Well, MWM has its own task force now as a part of the We Charge Genocide. We'll tell you more about that next week. Let's go back to, I was trying to give folks some time in case you wanted to come in and no one else has anything else to say. So we're going to move on, and we're going to go back to Sister Virginia and get some closing comments from her, and then we're going to close out for tonight.
Okay. I just want to thank you for inviting me to speak and represent the Coalition to Free Rochelle McGee. I want to also say that with regard to all of our political prisoners and all people who are incarcerated, the fact that COVID-19 is spreading throughout the facilities unabated and that prisoners are doing nothing really to protect folks against the spread of the COVID-19. The government is actually, government and prison officials, they're transforming life sentences into death sentences by letting themselves carry out the slow and execution. So we want people to be encouraged. We want people to be inspired to get involved with the cases of political prisoners, to in your communities, to write your
Congress people, your alder people, whatever their titles are. There are prisons throughout the country, so there are opportunities for all of us to get involved in helping to abolish prisons, to mm-hmm. free political mm-hmm. prisons, to create a different kind of understanding and reaction to crime and how we're going to mm-hmm. deal with crime. But when we create our new society, are we going to have prisons too? And we need to, all those things need to be figured out. We
wow.
want to we want to deal with that as we go
yes.
forward. So
absolutely.
I want to encourage you to write to Ruchelle McGee. His name, mm-hmm. Ruchelle, R-U-C-H-E-L-L, McGee, M-A-G-E-E. The address, and most people call this a hashtag. It's the number symbol
mm-hmm.
from Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
It's the number symbol A92051,
mm-hmm.
the number symbol then P115, California Medical Facility, Post Office Box 2000, Vacaville, V-A-C-A-V-I-L-L-E, Vacaville, California, 95696-2000. Please write him. Write Mumia, write Leonard Peltier,
mm-hmm.
write prisoners, keep them informed, keep their spirits up, write your government officials, demand their releases. That's what we're looking for. Get those folks out, free them all. All power to the people.
Ashe, ashe, ashe. My sister, thank you so much for, you know, coming on tonight, sharing this information. And you know we're going to be talking real soon anyway. So, but again, we really appreciate what you shared with us tonight. And family, again, as we've said, this is not just, you know, talk. It's not just a conversation. This is about folks' lives, and not only their lives, but people who gave their lives, you know, that stood up in our behalf, for our behalf. That's a little different. I mean, everyone deserves certain things, but certainly when people really put something in the game, for lack of a better word, they deserve a little more. You know, I mean, this is just, you know, some reality. And again, many of you are aware that we are in a war, and so we have to look at things in some regards in that manner. These are some of our soldiers. And so, again, no people who leaves their soldiers, you know, either on the field to be, you know, murdered or whatever. I mean, you know, we will not, again, think about the future generations. What legacies are we leaving for them? Because they're the ones that's going to have to face some of the stuff that we're dealing with right now. In all kinds of ways. So if we don't set some examples now, what are they going to be looking for and looking like? Y'all know history is important, and it's various things that have inspired us. The work of Nat Turner, you know, the work of Dr. Khaled, the work of Fannie Lou Hamer, the work of Ella Baker. If these people did not do these things and we saw or was able to hear of it, many of us would not have been as inspired or, you know, doing some of the work that we're doing. So again, examples are important. And again, sisters, if you do not help to keep the Million Woman March's legacy come next year, that 25 years, and then white women come along and start, you know, hooping and hollering about they the mother of civilization, blame yourself. I'm going to leave on that note. All right, family. You know we love y'all. Love y'all much. You know mama sometimes got to spank you, but we still love you always, no matter what. So we're going to close out. I want to remind everyone again, this program tonight is dedicated to my sister Liz. Sister Liz was one of our coordinators, serious black woman, took no stuff. She, of course, made transition. This will be the second year of her not being with us. She had breast cancer, and it hit all of a sudden. I mean, she got diagnosed in February and may transition in May, the day after Malcolm X's Earth Day. I will never forget it. And again, so this program tonight is for her. Because this month is also recognized as Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so with MWM, I can tell you that we have a project that we'll be implementing for next year that will be annual that focuses on our sisters and breast cancer, but also other forms of cancer so that we can have proper support systems and other things for our women, for our sisters. And it's not a government program. Anyway, I'm messing with y'all. All right, family, we're going to close out again. We thank everyone for tuning in, and we will be back next week, same time. Again, if you're in Philly on Monday, join us at Octavius Cato's statue at City Hall. We'll start a petition to demand Black history is taught in the public school. Oh, and I forgot. One of our We Charge Genocide 21 issues is, and we'll be putting this information out on Monday as well, for a Black Solid Day, we'll be sharing with those who we encounter that we want our people to take a stand, and one of the demands for the We Charge Genocide 21 is all student loan, Black student loan, has to be rescinded. The madness of our students going through this debt. We want all student loan debt rescinded, and for the future, tuition-free education for our people, so that they're never faced again with the debt of so-called education. Now, here's the point. Now, we know that's a discussion in certain circles for debt forgiveness. That's not what we're saying. And with that said, we have to get first dibs, meaning how can somebody else get some debt forgiveness and not the people who was enslaved for 250-plus years? How do they get some forgiving of debt first? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So for anybody else can have that conversation, our students and parents must have that removed. The proper word technically and legally is rescinded. Okay, that is the name. That's the word. That's the best word in this case. So we're saying that for the We Charge Genocide 21, one of our reparatory justice resolutions slash remedies is all Black student loan debt rescinded, eliminated totally, and for the future, tuition-free education for any and all of our people, be it skills training, be it academics, whatever. That has to be a part of reparatory justice. And if we don't get it for us right now, we have to at least make certain that it happens for the future. So Black women, when we talk about what we got to do for our children, wake up. Here it is. At least some of it. So that's what we're doing on Monday. All right, Sally. Again, we love you all. We're going to play as we leave out what we played last night when we kicked off the information for the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violence and Abuse of Women and Girls of African Descent, long title. But, again, this was also or is also National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And we say domestic for the Black woman is not just about your a partner, a husband, a significant other. Domestic means the U.S. The violence and abuse of Black women in the U.S., that's domestic for us, not just at home, but in the streets, in prison, on the job, in some of your faith-based places. That's the domestic abuse that we're talking about. So with that, we're going to close out as we did open up last night with none other than El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. And again, saying the famous words, very short, very sweet, but right to the point, and y'all will get it. And, of course, here it is.
became a Muslim, he didn't get to see a Bible. If when someone goes from the left, here's woman. He will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. We will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that this woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as until we outside you and place the same over the head of anyone.
Let women stand up straight.